I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Monday, March 1st, 2021, and this is episode 109 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. Today's show is sponsored by Love at First by Kate Claiborne, an uplifting and unforgettable story of love and second chances. It's the newest release from the author of Love Lettering, which is a book that I absolutely adored, and if you have not read that, you should also read that one. 16 years ago, a teenaged Will Sterling heard a warm-voiced stranger on a balcony and knew this was the girl of his dreams. An unexpected inheritance brings him back to that same address where he plans to offload his new property and get back to his regular life as an overworked doctor. But Nora Clark won't let handsome, curious Will ruin her quirky, close-knit building. She's determined to sabotage his plans regardless of their undeniable connection. A balcony, a star-crossed couple, a fateful meeting? Maybe it's the kind of story that can't work out in the end. Or maybe it's the perfect second chance. Love at First by Kate Claiborne is available wherever books are sold and at kensingtonbooks.com. So this week's best thing is the Shadow and Bone trailer. It's a new TV show based on the books by Leigh Bardugo. And a lot of times these trailers kind of leave me cold, but this trailer, it like took my breath away. I was like speechless at the end. It was a really good trailer. Now, I read the book Shadow and Bone. I didn't finish the rest of that trilogy. It was fine. I wasn't in love with it. But then I read Six of Crows, the duology, also by Leigh Bardugo, and I adored it so much that I was like, I want to write a heist too. And I actually met Leigh Bardugo once in an elevator at a conference, and she was very lovely. She was, I've met quite a few celebrities, my brother being an actor and is friends with celebrities, people you've heard of. And so they're not always lovely. Like people who are very, very successful and well-known and kind of adored, which Leigh Bardugo absolutely is. But she was very lovely. So anyway, I'm excited about this trailer. I am excited about the show. And yeah. I'm recording late because I was not feeling well at all yesterday when I was intending to record. But in my writing update, let's see, where were we? I had gotten stuck before. We talked about that. And I moved through that. I wrote a chapter that I really like. Like, I really think I did what I needed to do. And then I moved on to the next chapter. And I was like, uh-oh. I have so many threads that I don't know that are in my head. Like, I'm not sure I'm holding the whole story in my head properly. So after a day or so of trying to figure out exactly what this chapter needed, I think we're at chapter 20 or 21. I was like, I need to stop and reread the whole thing. I just need to reread everything up until this point, make some notes, and then plan the whole end in more detail. Because usually when I'm plotting the end, it's way less sketched out than the first two thirds of the book. Cause I know that things change and I know where I'm going. Like I know the end point of my journey, but I realize that spending a lot of time up front, like really clearly figuring out everything about the end is just wasted time. So this is the point where like I've written the first two thirds of the book. I know. In theory, I know everything that I put in there. But you know, like when you're writing, and this happens all the time, like I'll write a scene and then I'll be like, oh, I actually laid the groundwork for that earlier and I didn't realize consciously what I was doing, but now I can totally take advantage of that and make that pay off. So sometimes you're laying the, what are they called? Like plants and payoffs, I think. You're planting something, and then you can make it pay off. Sometimes you write the payoff and then you have to go back and plant it earlier. And sometimes it's the opposite way. So I know that I've got things that I figured were plants. Like I was writing them, like, I'm not sure where this is going, but let's just go with it. And then if I need to cut it later, I will. So those types of things. So I've gone back. I've reread the first 10 chapters. I have another 10 chapters to do so that I can really plot and know where I'm going with the end. Like, I know what has to happen, but I do want to make sure I'm tying up the loose ends and I'm sort of keeping the promises that past Leslie has made. So this is future Leslie. Now is the future, and it's time to make sure all of the chickens come home to roost. I don't know why I thought about that, but anyway. So yeah, schedule is just out the window at this point. Once I figure out what I'm doing, I'll make a new schedule to finish the rest of it. Also, I'm thinking that, you know, I'm writing this book as a standalone, but I think everything can have serious potential. And I love these characters, and there's so much more that I could be exploring. And, you know, this world I've created, I've done so much research, so I would love to come back to these characters in this world. But this book is not going to have a cliffhanger of any kind. It's going to be a very good ending that might have, you know, an open door or an open window. I mean, not really a door. A small open window from which you can be like, hey, what's that about? I would like to read more about that. And as I write the end, it's sort of like, okay, I have to figure out those things. And not that I want to plot another book. I just want to leave myself some breathing room so that I can have an open thread that maybe I don't even know what it is. And I will trust future Leslie to figure that out. It'll be one of those things. So yeah, that's kind of where the writing has gone on the heist project. On my other project, I am working on plotting and really tightening up the character motivations, doing my Enneagrams, trying to figure out who these characters are, what they want beneath the surface. You know, like I have the surface level wants, but I really do have to dig in and learn as much about them as I can up front, which is not as much as I'll know later on. So worksheets, it's all about the worksheets. It's answering questions. So that's why I like the worksheets. It just allows me to order my thinking about what do I need to know? You know, like I could just, and I just brainstorm, what do I know about this character? And I list everything down. But having a structure helps me. And so I've got all kinds of things. Like I've been gathering, I create worksheets from craft books that I read. I also download them when I encounter them on the web. So I've got a big folders full of plotting and character worksheets. And I don't use a lot of them all the time. I use, you know, there's the ones I use the most. And then when I'm thinking through something, I'm like, oh, wait, that worksheet might help me. I'll dig around and find it. There's also onestopforwriters.com, which has a ton of fantastic worksheets also that I really like. And they're online, so I can just fill them in there and keep them in the little folder. They also have the Emotion Thesaurus and so many wonderful resources that I use just about every day. So yeah, I've sort of been cobbling together a bunch of different things to help me clarify the characters and then going back and forth with the plot and the characters to flesh this out, create a really good synopsis, and then I will start fast drafting. So that is the plan there. And that's actually going really well. I also, you know, sometimes during this process, you need help. So I turned to my mastermind people yesterday during our meeting, and they helped me flesh out some character motivations and some ideas. And that was really eye-opening. It was so helpful. Like sometimes you just need to talk something through with someone else. And, you know, every day I've kind of been talking a few things over with my husband and just brainstorming and bouncing ideas off of him. And I've gotten, you know, further than I have been. Like, it's sort of interesting. It's, the way I work is sort of, I input lots and lots of information. So that's what the initial research is. Research, time period, locations, characters, when they're real people, and just put it all in my head. Then give myself a few days, not consciously thinking about it. And then it's sort of like it's cooking. And then like the bell will go off and I'll like sit down and I'll just type out everything. So in this case, I actually wrote it on my Remarkable. I needed to get off the computer. So I went, I just had a scene change, just get out of this office also because I'm here all the time. And I love my office, but I'm here all the time. So I just sat down on the couch and started writing. And writing by hand is hard for me. Even though my wrist is better, you know, at one point when I had hurt my wrist, writing by hand was really difficult because I couldn't grip the pen properly. But even now, it just hurts. Like, I don't understand how people write books by hand. I wrote 6 pages by hand, and I was like, oh, I need ice. I need to stretch my fingers. But yes, I just wrote down, I told myself the story. And so next is the process, which I was talking about a couple weeks ago, of taking the story that I wrote, which uses sort of my intuitive understanding of story structure and how things are supposed to be laid out, and then applying a structure to it to make sure that I don't have big holes and I'm not missing something, or that maybe there's a potential to increase the conflict. Because my first pass is, I'm kind of easy on the characters, you know? There's always room for more conflict and to batter them a little bit more and to put them through the ringer, because that's a more satisfying reading experience, I think, in general. Like, I don't want to torture them unnecessarily, but you want to torture them to a certain degree to get the best, most interesting page-turny story that you can. And I really like that process. And it does, it feels like baking. It feels like I've been gathering ingredients for weeks and weeks, and sometimes months, depending on the project. And then it's not a perfect metaphor, but mix it all together and then let it cook. And the cooking, instead of taking an hour or two, it can take another few days or weeks. And sometimes it's like, it's still cooking, you know, it's still in there. And each iteration that I make on the plot and the characters, and then going back and forth between them, is just a result of all of the cooking time in my brain that's been going on. Some people cook for years, you know, like, I can't think of a project that I don't consciously think of things over the course of years. And in my experience so far, the projects that have taken, like that I've gone back to over and over again over the course of years, I still haven't finished. Like, exceptions would be the Cupid Guild stories. So the shorts that I have that are short romances. One or two of those started as just an idea that I wrote a few thousand words on and then just kind of poured out of me, and then I set it aside. It was completely unfinished. I think two of them were like that. Years later, I had originally wrote them for a magazine, and I was approached. It's like, oh, do you have any short romances? And I'm like, well, I've got a couple that I could finish. So pull them out, dust them off. I really liked them. I could finish them. So that's merely my only experience with having something that sat around for years that I actually completed and became a product. All of the other unfinished manuscripts, I'm not saying that I'll never finish them, because I still don't want to admit defeat, but I would have to restart them from the beginning, I know now. And that's daunting, because as many ideas as I have, like, I'm always getting new ones. And it's painful to think about something that I might have 50, 60, 70,000 words written 5 years ago, and then every year and a half kind of went back to it and thought about it and tried to work on it and just never finished it. Like, letting something like that go is hard. A lot of people have trunk novels that they feel very confident about that will never see the light of day. And I just don't have that level of confidence. I would love for them to see the light of day at some point. Not to belabor the point. It's just, it is a painful thing to think about. Like, these stories that I had so much energy for, and I still do love. Like, I love all of those ideas, and I would love to be able to finish them the way that they deserve, put them out. And, you know, there's still time. Even as all of the new ideas are hitting me, and I'm like, oh, what's my next thing? I have like a kernel of like the next thing that I don't know what I'll do with. It's really just another kernel. But those things sort of hit you all the time, and it's sad. Maybe I should allow myself some time to mourn the unfinished manuscripts. Talking about structure, I saw a tweet thread by author Fonda Lee. She was talking about Western storytelling, and she says, I've been thinking about how much Western storytelling trains us to expect that writers show the audience where they're going right up front. Main characters have to be introduced right away, twists have to be foreshadowed, etc., etc. And then she talks about her favorite stories, especially Asian ones, don't adhere to those rules. And she mentions Parasite. And it's interesting, so I'm not linked to it, because I see people talking about things like this, like sort of the structure of Western storytelling and how to maybe disrupt it, or how it's not the only way to do things. And I mean, of course, it's not the only way, you know. Other cultures have storytelling. It just got me thinking, like, the way I think about story, obviously, is Western. I'm American. I'm nothing else. Like, grew up here. I don't have any immigrants in my family. I'm just from here. So I have grown up with Western storytelling, and that's the way stories make sense to me. Something like Parasite. I did not like that movie. We watched it with my family, and my brother had seen it before and watched it again. And I was with my mom and her partner, and the three of us were like, I don't get it. My brother's like, oh, that was amazing. And I'm like, okay, no, I'm sure that you and many other people obviously loved it, but it didn't do it for me. I did not understand it. Like, I understood things about it and what it was trying to say, but I just didn't enjoy that movie. And so, I mean, obviously there's room for everything. And I think that it's great to expand. And if you have another culture that you're coming from that does things a different way, that's wonderful. But I think about writing the books that I want to read, and I like what resonates with me. And I quoted Sean Coyne from StoryGrid before, talking about a story that works. And obviously, hero's journey, all of that is very Western focused. And those are the stories, that's kind of how we instinctually understand stories to be, I think, when you're growing up in this culture. And maybe if you've grown up in other cultures, you instinctually understand stories to be something different. And those kinds of stories speak to you. I think that given the popularity of Western storytelling universally or worldwide, I don't know about the universe, it must speak to people in other cultures also. Or is it just that it was forced on them, from colonialism? You must understand stories this way. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But you know, everyone's going to approach things differently. And if there is a market for, you know, these stories that don't adhere to the Western structure, that's fantastic. But I don't think that means that the Western storytelling and what it's trained us to expect and to enjoy is wrong in any way. There's something to be said for disrupting things that are harmful and that are limiting. And maybe if you feel limited by story structure, then disrupt it. I mean, plenty of people do. There's plenty of sort of anti-plot in StoryGrid terms where, who are those beat poet people? I don't think I read any of these books, Kurt Vonnegut or something. I'm not sure. But people like that who are writing weird stories that don't have a beginning, middle, and end and sort of twist. And people enjoy those too. Obviously I haven't read any of that. And I can't even think of the names of the stories I'm thinking about. But I feel we should all focus on writing the stories that we want to read and that are intriguing and interesting to us. And if that includes changing things up and switching up the structure and trying to come at it from other perspectives and backgrounds in terms of how stories are told, then that's great. But at the same time, it can feel like some of the criticism that happens these days is very morally based. If you're not trying to work against Western ideals, then there's something wrong with you. And for all of the people who are acculturated in this way, this is just our culture. This is how we've learned to do things. This is how we do things. And yeah, Western culture, because of its dominance, can make it seem like other cultures are wrong and bad, but it's not mutually exclusive. And not that that tweet threat said that it was mutually exclusive. I think that so much of the criticism of the way things are makes it seem like the way things are wrong. And when the point is that the way things are not the only way, and there are many ways to do it, and none of them are wrong. You know, the world is big enough for every type of story. Now, every type of story might not sell and be popular and be widely regarded as a good story, but I think there is room for everything. The wonderful thing about the internet is it creates these niches. So you can find someone who wants exactly what you're doing. Now, you might not find a million of those people. You might not find enough of those people to sustain a career. I mean, you might, but you can certainly find enough of those people to bring you satisfaction for having given them what they want. And fan fiction proves that. There is something for everybody and someone is going to like it. And I think that's, if you're a creator at the end of the day, that's kind of what you have to get back to. So, So I need to go start my writing for the morning and hopefully get this podcast up sometime today. It's going to be late, but I feel much better now. And yeah, this week, figuring out the end of the book for the heist story and getting as much written as I can, getting a new schedule together and moving forward. I hope that everyone has a wonderful week this week, and I will talk to you next week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. I would love a rating or review. It helps to support the show and helps people find us. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.